I was thinking for the first episode, the intro we talked about was like, Welcome to Propaganda Loves You, the show that asks and answers the question, what kind of show is this? Or what is this show about? Or something like that, just for the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Something like, Welcome to Propaganda Loves You, the show that asks and answers the question, what the hell are we even talking about?
Yeah.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Welcome to Propaganda Loves You, the show that asks and answers the question, what the hell are we even talking about? I'm your host, Cody. Oh, we're your host for the show, Cody. already fucking it up.
I love it.
Hey, well, so, we got it. Let's move on.
Perfect.
Okay. I like it. Welcome to Propaganda Loves You, the show that asks and answers the question, what the hell are we even talking about? We're your hosts for the show. Wait.
it trips you up. It trips you up.
Okay.
Welcome to Propaganda Loves You, the show that asks and answers the question, what the hell are we even talking about? Left to right, we got Joe, Cody, and Arthur. Let's get into it.
Wow, you see how a professional does it.
Yeah, see, Joe, you should have just gone first.
Standing up in front of teenagers and yapping all the time gives you good practice, I guess.
So, Joe, Arthur, we've decided to start a podcast. This is probably the first show, I think, right? Like, we just did another recording on what propaganda is. But today, if we're going to be talking about a little bit about who we are and where we come from and why we're even here to have this conversation in the first place, why we decided that we wanted to start a show, a propaganda show about propaganda and where that's going to take us. But why are we here? What is it that kind of brought us to this point? Why are we wanting to put our voice and name out there given the current political climate? But before we can even talk about propaganda or some of the topics that we really want to get into, like disinformation and some of the different things that are going on in the United States and around the world that are kind of shaping our narratives and the way that we view things, before we can have that conversation, we think that anyone listening to this podcast needs to know a bit more about us, our background, and what brings us to this point, and also kind of our biases that we might bring into the conversation in the first place. So
I got biases. Okay. I guess for prosperity's sake, I should say I'm Arthur. You know, I grew up very early on, became vegetarian at the age of like 11. And
starting strong,
starting right out. And you know, for me, it was like an environmental thing and also just, I guess, empathetic or moral stake that I had as well. But I think growing up, you know, everybody has like these political moments in life and these, you know, historical moments that obviously, you know, shape us and contextualize exactly where we are. And for me, a few of these things were, you know, surpassing the whole 300 parts per million in the atmosphere when they were, you know, claiming that CO2 levels were going to be, you know, way too high of a threshold. And of course, you know, there's all these elections that go on. And anyway, just like to context myself, I would say that, you know, early on, I had like a really big interest in the environment. And I see right now, like propaganda and consumerism really goes against environmental impact and like the health of the people on the planet rather than like short-term capital gains and job numbers going up. And so for me, there's a lot of propaganda around consumerism that I would love to address. And I also think like politically, you know, personally, I volunteered for Bernie and was more about the 2016 Bernie election because I saw somebody who had a lot of like social and public good values and wanting to do a lot of public good. And that really motivated me as well. So there's also a lot of political areas too. But I think just like context wise, you know, grew up in kind of a more liberal leaning household. And that was really encouraged to kind of question the things around us. And I think that's a very important part of this podcast.
Absolutely. So you're interested in exploring how propaganda affects everyday, you know, not just Americans, but people all around the world, and kind of like the capitalist society and consumer marketing to people and the narratives that are pushed in that direction.
Definitely. As somebody who watches a lot of advertisements and likes to look at them through a certain lens and kind of laugh at some advertisements sometimes, I think it's just so important to recognize like the language and discourse behind them and also the imagery. And the, you know, I think that like capitalism and the world around us, it doesn't do a job of like telling us like, you know, you have to consume, but it puts out there like a whole world where they make it impossible to like even envision a world where you don't consume. And that's like the power that propaganda has.
Yeah. When you live under that for so long that it doesn't seem like it's hard to see propaganda, right? That's just life.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Arthur. Joe, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah.
Who are you? What are your biases that you may or may not have?
Yeah. What biases or may I not have? I don't know.
For those just listening right now, I'm going to quickly describe Joe's shirt to you. It is a cat staring directly at you, and it says General Strike on the shirt.
Purchased on the Amazon store from the International Workers of the World store. OG American Socialist Institution. Good t-shirts, cozy. Yeah. But I was just going to say, I loved what you said, Arthur, about the sort of early exposure to vegetarianism and having that sort of like political urgency instilled in you in a way, and sort of having like those early life-changing moments where you recognize something going on in the world and like, you know, I got to do something. So I'm going to stop eating meat. I was kind of moved by that. And I've gone back and forth with vegetarianism in my adult life. I got into it in like early 20s when I watched a documentary called Earthlings. Don't watch it if you are worried about being triggered or traumatized by a film, because it is very upsetting to watch. But yeah, I watched that movie and I was like, no way, not eating meat. I can't do it. Like, allowing yourself to have an emotionally political moment like that is such an important moment in life. I feel like everyone has some triggering event that happened and just made them shift their worldview in a radical way. Like, oh no, I've been seeing it all wrong. I got to look at it differently. I think those are really important. As far as my personal background and biases and stuff, I know I don't want to reiterate too much of what will already be on the other episode later, that it will talk about a little more like personal details with growing up and stuff. But grew up in the working class, was sort of familiar with poverty growing up and sort of understood the world in class terms. I didn't really understand a lot of the racism or homophobia or sort of infighting going on. I knew all kinds of people and thought that a lot of them were good and a lot of them were bad, and it didn't really matter what you look like. But if you were really, really, really stinking rich, I was a little suspicious right off the bat because, like, I don't know, that's just how I grew up. So I still have a strong bias towards the working class. I still always assume institutions, corporations, and governments are trying to disillusion the people, trying to confuse them, trying to manipulate them. I'm very suspicious of institutions and governments in general. And I believe that, like, as a species on the planet right now, we are struggling to figure out how to connect with one another again in light of all this propaganda going on around us. And there's a lot of really scary stuff online, a lot of really oppressive news, a lot of terrible things you can tune into, and we should tune into. On the other hand, though, there are a lot of people creatively trying to figure out how to work together in this new landscape. There are people trying to build communities online, trying to share resources, educate each other, learn different languages even. That's huge. You know, we're so monolingual in the United States. It takes effort and interest and often money to actually spend the time to learn another language. But that's something we need to start doing if we want to really talk about like a human species coming together to not let these billionaires destroy the planet for us. So I think Arthur and I have a lot of the same political biases. In a lot of ways, I'm not like a perfectly clean vegetarian, but if I'm doing the buying or if I'm doing the cooking, I keep it vegetarian. And yeah, I think some basic empathy is definitely needed by a lot of people, especially a lot of men. We don't get encouraged to indulge our empathy growing up as men, especially as white men. We kind of get this stoic philosophy instilled in us, you know, keep your head down, work hard, be tough. you can cry, but not too much. Do it in private. So I kind of want to open that up a little bit and encourage people, you know, it's okay to feel things. You actually already are feeling things, and that's okay. So you can admit it and you can talk about it. And that's part of what we're going to do here. We're going to talk about history. We're going to talk about propaganda. We're going to talk about government and politics and all this stuff. But we're also just going to talk about what it feels like to be, you know, a white guy in the world today trying to figure out what the hell we can even do about anything. And part of that is self-reflective and introspective, and we have to talk about our feelings and things like that. So those are some of my personal interests and biases and intellectual hobby horses and stuff.
Yeah. So if you had to, like, say, you know, your beats or your areas that you really think you would focus in on over the course of the show, what do you think that would be for you, Joe?
Yeah, for the podcast, I definitely wouldn't mind being like the history person doing the history episodes. I have a lot of books about history I want to read and things to talk about. But I also want to do like mental health stuff, basic emotional intelligence. I also teach meditation in my free time, like on a volunteer basis. So I'd love to do a little bit of that. Yeah, those kinds of things. Yeah. And maybe, nice. Maybe just nice. Like liberate, as far as current events go, like liberation politics, like actual revolutions going on in the world, not just in the United States, what people are doing to resist oppressive regimes all over the world, and trying to sort of have a conversation about how we can learn from other places.
A little bit about my background. My name is Cody, and I spent a little over 14 years working in the federal government, 9 years active duty Marine Corps, and then another 5 years working for the Department of the Army. And that entire time was spent working in the intelligence field in counterterrorism. I left that life in 2022, but I would say, you know, I actually have a lot more trust, I think, in institutions having worked on the inside for a long time. That's not to say everyone is doing the right thing and everyone's trying to do the right thing. There's obviously bad actors out there, and there's people that have different views that want to see government go in different directions and want to use institutions for things that aren't necessarily beneficial, right? But I think in general, I have a idealistic view of what the United States could be based off of what we tend to say we are versus what we do. And I think we can move closer to what we have said we are, like the striving to protect people, protect other countries, these things that we fail to live up to sometimes, or most of the time, depending on your point of view. So I think, you know, I guess my bias is just more pro-United States probably than both of you guys have in general.
Whoa.
I have an American flag just like everybody else.
I mean, I guess it's just, you know, after spending that long working for the government, I think I'm less suspicious of institutions, or I used to be less suspicious of institutions, right? Yeah. For me, it really depends on who's at the top and who's kind of like doing the direction on the way down. After, you know, most of my career under Obama, like it was very interesting watching how, you know, rules of engagement or different things change with different administrations coming in. So I think that's one of the reasons why I have a more favorable view of government when, you know, some people are running it, because I've been in government when different types of administrations are running. And I can tell you it's a very different experience. And some of them, you feel like they're trying to do the right thing, whether they actually do the right thing or not. But you can definitely tell when people are not trying.
Follow up what you were saying, because like what I hear you saying and what I think I agree with there is this sense, well, first that the institutions that already exist and the government agencies that already exist have an enormous amount of power, have an enormous amount of influence, the ability to change things in the world. And you've seen that. And I've seen some of that in my shorter time in the military. And what it sounds like you're saying is there's this hope that power can be taken back in control of a more democratic process and used to actually do good work in the world. And that's what the propaganda we get is that, you know, it's a government by the people, for the people. They just don't tell you that those people are just the ruling class and not everybody else. But no, there is that ideal. And I think I agree with that, right? Like, to the extent that, like, there is any potential with the institutions of the United States, it lies in that possibility of average people realizing what that potential is and coming together and aggressively demanding it be used for good. And you not think, yeah, despite my vast suspicions about the government and the institutions and stuff, I share that hope and that aspiration for what it can be. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think the reason for that is, like, after same, having worked in those positions for so long and all the people that you meet in those, like the majority of those people are normal people, right? That are just trying to do what they can to keep the government running, keep the United States running and keep Americans safe. That's the vast majority. But just like the office, it really depends on who the boss is, like what's going on. Like, I know a lot of people maybe think that that doesn't change things, but it absolutely sets the tone for the rest of those agencies, right? Who's in charge and who do they appoint to lead those agencies and what they focus on, right? That is a massive, massive part of it. Please stay tuned for a word from our sponsors.
A weak man starts his day with oat milk. A real man starts his day with Victory Coffee.
You know who else like weak coffee? The communists.
Victory Coffee, we don't do soy. We don't do fair trade, and we definitely don't apologize for being American.
Every sip tastes like punching a socialist.
Made from 100% conflict-grown beans, Victory Coffee is the only coffee approved for use in covert military operations.
Victory Coffee contains 600 milligrams of caffeine per serving, may cause excessive patriotism, unnecessary aggression, and the sudden desire to buy a tactical vest.
One other thing I wanted to hit on why we decided to do this show. I had a moment. It was the 4th of July of 2024. Yeah, it would have been. So before the election and after the presidential debate. And I was sitting on my back patio. It's a nice, beautiful 4th of July up here in the north country of New York. If you haven't visited, you should. It's great that time of year. But I was scrolling on my phone, and it was, I think it was the day after, I believe it was Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation, was quoted as saying, "We're in the middle of the second American Revolution, and it will remain bloodless as long as the left allows it to be." This was kind of early when Project 2025 wasn't really mainstream, I don't think, at that point. Like, if you're on the internet, you knew about it at that point, right? If you spent a lot of time in Reddit or anything like that, but it hadn't really been, you know, become part of the zeitgeist yet. And I think I was just, to be completely frank, I got super depressed based off of just where we are as a society and how divided we are. Sometimes it feels like we can't have conversations because we're not using the same set of facts, or we're not even acknowledging that other people have an opinion, or completely writing off that opinion as false because of the information that we're receiving. After the election that we had, I had thought going into that that people would be able to see through some of the different narratives that are being spread, and also maybe we're more aware of the way that they are being targeted pretty much every day by different intelligence services. My background makes me think of that first, and that the American people probably don't realize in general that every time they go on the internet, they're being targeted in some way for their attention to shape their beliefs. And so after seeing the results of the election, that's kind of what pushed me to want to do something. And the reason that I was thinking about propaganda is just because of my background. I've got some experience when it comes to disinformation and understanding how information operations work. Not saying I'm an expert by any means, but I felt like this is an area where I could do some good to help people understand how to identify when someone's trying to influence them. Like, that's, to me, kind of the objective for the show.
No, I like it. It gives a nice, like, glimmer of hope, too, that if, you know, we had an educated voting majority, that the institutes and the system could work and solve issues.
Yeah. And actually, Joe, you mentioned online advocacy and what some people do to combat different narratives online and how people get creative. That was also another big part of why I think a show like this is important, because in the United States, let me use Finland as an example, right? We absolutely need to look outside of the United States for examples of ways to combat disinformation and propaganda. You look at a place like Finland, where they actually teach this. It's a subject that they teach in school, right? This is critical thinking, like understanding disinformation, because they live next to Russia and they've been dealing with this for years and years and years. But in the US, we don't really have that. And the institutions that had been stood up to combat this have been basically attacked at every level of our government to shut them down. And as of today, they are both shut down. And I'll talk more about that when we talk about the Russia episode. But yeah, we, in the U.S., are very ill-prepared and don't have an education system that could help people recognize this. So that's the other big thing that I wanted to mention.
Yeah, no, that's very true. By far the most heavily propagandized population in the world. Not only do, like you're saying, are there all kinds of institutions and governments around the world that want to influence us, but our own government and our own institutions are also constantly doing that to us. So we're getting it from everybody. But I mean, shout out to Mrs. Jeter from my eighth grade reading and language arts class for teaching us about propaganda when I know that that was not on the curriculum. She did not have to teach that, but she took it upon herself to teach us that. Yeah, I sent her a nice letter when I finished my PhD, and I sent her a copy of my dissertation because I was like, oh, just a good, she's like the, you know, the romantic English teacher moment where they just inspire you to actually pursue your dreams and all that. Mrs. Jeter in eighth grade, that was the inspiration teacher moment for me. So, but yeah, she also was the only public educator, K through 12, who ever told me anything about propaganda. Wow. I don't know what to say about it other than just underline everything you just said. It's like, we don't get taught how to do this stuff. We get taught how to show up 5 days a week, 9 to 5 or 8 to 4, basically. And I wonder what that's training us to get used to, you know? So we get taught certain things, but not others. And it's interesting to see the difference.
I 100% agree. I think we should spend a little bit, like we're kind of already talking about this, but what are we actually trying to do, you know, with this show? Like we're trying to show people or use historical examples of propaganda to illustrate parallels to today, use specific, like confirmed disinformation operations and kind of break those down in a way that people can understand how they work a little bit and maybe are more cautious when they're interacting online, right? Because of understanding these things. We want to make sure, at least from my perspective, that people are armed with the ability to spot disinformation or propaganda, and then assess internally if they still agree with what was said or not, right? Like, I think that's, in my mind, if you can give people those two tools, like, maybe they're going to come away and say, I still agree with it. But like, you know, that's on them at that point. What do you guys think? What are you trying to impart from this show?
I'm thinking of the movie John Carpenter's They Live. Okay, that's pretty interesting. I think you might both like it. We could have a, you know, it's like book club and movie night, you know? But yeah, I think like to address this, the point is that in this movie, John Carpenter's They Live, the protagonist puts on these glasses and it allows him to see ideologies. And so he looks at a billboard and it might be like somebody drinking a Coca-Cola, and then it's like, you know, it turns into a skeleton face staring at him with a Coke that, you know, might say like death or something. And the idea might be like, you know, Coca-Cola or Nestle, the bad ramifications. But I think that the idea there is that, like, you know, there are these glasses that allow you to see ideology. And I think to like what Joe's saying, similarly, it's really throughout K through 12, it was very difficult. I think I had one class in a government kind of class that taught me about these things, but nobody is teaching us to put these glasses on and kind of see the world beyond what is just presented to us. And so for me, at least from a consumerism kind of perspective, I think I would hope that people would be informed and be able to take these biases from other people and see how they're applied in their life and see that maybe some of their frustrations or a context of their political socioeconomic situation in the world comes from other actors and they have their own motives.
Yeah, I love that. Definitely want to check that movie out now. It sounds really, really interesting. I love the glasses metaphor too, because like what my whole thing is like perspective and recognizing that you already have glasses on every time you open your eyes and like you didn't actually design them or build them yourself. Most of the time you just sort of took them from what people gave you growing up. And yeah, part of what I want to do on this show is like urge people to just turn the attention back on itself and really spend some time thinking about what kind of glasses you're looking at the world through every day. And you know, understanding it, describing it for yourself, and also trying to be more and more intentional about changing it in ways that maybe it should be changed, you know, because we all need to develop our point of view on any number of topics, on everything, really. Like, it's always changing. The context is always shifting. It's not just that, like, you can accept the one way of looking at things and then just trust that it'll always be the right way to look at things. Like, you have to constantly update this stuff and do some self-reflection. And yeah, I guess I want to try to normalize that and encourage it and demonstrate it. I want us to be self-reflective with each other and talk about our different points of view and everything. And yeah, we're already doing a lot of that. I love it. But yeah, movie club as well as book club. I'm down.
Popcorn not included.
We could get some branded popcorn for the logo on there.
Yeah.
Send it out.
In a year, it'll be like, sponsored by MoviePass, brought to you by Coca-Cola.
Can we go ahead and put Isaac Neutron just as like a logo?
Yes. Yeah, we could do that. So we kind of talked a little bit about what we want to get out of this podcast and what we want to relay. I also want to mention our intent here with the show. Like, at least I'm going to say something and then you guys can disagree with me if you do, but I think it was when we were initially talking about the concept, we don't want this to come off as a show where we're just going to be bashing on certain political groups or anything like that. That's not the intent. There's enough shows out there that spend their entire time focusing on Trump or, you know, a different social media influencer or anything like that, that we don't need to do that, right? I might recommend a few, like, as we go through, right? If there's one that I think is, like, really good or someone that's doing great work or journalism, then, you know, we might make those recommendations. But for us, it's really about, you know, if individuals are pushing narratives that could be untrue or propagandistic or straight up, like, disinformation from another country, then in my mind, they veered into the lane that we would want to analyze, right? Like, that's something that we would be interested in taking a look at from one of our angles. And the reason I'm saying this is because whoever listens to this episode, like, they might have completely different politics than us, or might be extremely conservative or agree with people that we don't agree with politically. I don't want them to think that they couldn't listen to the show and still get something out of it, though. We're talking about something that is still useful to anyone to understand, I hope.
Yeah, I think analyze is a great term. I think that in order to kind of discuss propaganda, you kind of got to put everything on the table. And so I don't think it's fair to be like weighted on one side or the other. I think that, you know, if we talk about our bicameral system, we would definitely look at both parties as being putting out propaganda with their own biases. I think we'd look at, you know, from a world point of view, the exact same thing with different countries. And I think what I would say is, like, you know, if somebody is listening and they find it like an immediate shut off, you know, to not want to listen to it based off of one thing, that's the type of thing that they should examine why. Yes. And what is their value in that. But I think that's a great way to look at it. And I think analyze is a great fair term for all of it.
And if we happen to be talking about a subject or an individual or a group that you traditionally support and they keep coming up on the podcast, that also might be a question why. Like, we're not going to be going like, we just need to talk about X group or something like that because of what they've done in the past or whatnot. As people are pushing propaganda or as people are pushing disinformation, they will likely show up more on this show than others, I would say.
Yeah, I was just going to echo sentiment and support for everything you guys were saying about that. I'm definitely not trying to get into any bickering or arguing or anything on this show. Like, I think we're all of the understanding that we're trying to understand the world. We're trying to have conversations about how to understand it. And of course, you have to describe people's points of view. You have to describe different arguments and everything. And you have to analyze and critique and pick apart. And that's part of the process. But yeah, what you're saying about other people's reactions, like, we have our own reactions to things, you know, but like, when you can notice your own reaction, that's the best teaching moment you'll ever get in your life, is when you have a moment, like, in the moment when you notice a reaction happening. And this is really for the listeners when I say some like super lefty shit. And if you're like a really conservative person and you get upset about it, that's fine. That's, you know, normal. But to understand where the reaction comes from, you know, why is it such a strong reaction? Because there's some core value there that needs to be looked at. and not necessarily changed, just maybe understood in a different way, maybe put into a different kind of action. So it's really an invitation to the listeners to take this, regardless of whether you agree with us or not, to take it as an opportunity to better understand yourself, if nothing else, right? Listen to it, have an open mind, think whatever you want about it, but really, is it helping you understand yourself a little bit better?
Yeah, I love that insight. I was just going to say that by happenstance, I'm reading a book called Anger and Forgiveness by Martha Nussbaum, and she talks about anger and as a reaction and in those moments how it's like the greatest learning moment because it's teaching you why you're angry. Is it a misunderstanding and how to kind of look at it through that lens? So that was really interesting.
She's like a famous philosopher, right?
Yeah, I think, maybe like University of Chicago or something. Yeah. I read some of her stuff in college and I was just like going through a list of people that I read and seeing what other books they put out recently.
Nice.
It's pretty good.
Please stay tuned for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Freedom Coin, the only crypto where we're not even pretending it's about decentralization anymore.
That's right. It's just a fast-moving, hyped vehicle designed to pump our value until we bail, and you're left holding the bag.
Do we have blockchain? No idea. Are we solving global poverty? Absolutely not. Are you going to make an obscene amount of money in the next 6 weeks while yelling freedom into your wallet? Hell yes.
Buy the dip. Shill it to your friends. Pretend it's the future. And when it all crashes?
Blame the government, or China, or fiat. It really doesn't matter. We'll be gone by then.
Freedom Coin is not responsible for emotional, financial, or spiritual losses. Influencer wallets are pre-filled, the coin is going to the moon, and you're going to pay for the rocket.
I think we should talk just a little bit about what people can expect. We did earlier, we said we were going to talk about history a little bit. One thing that I'll probably focus on a bit for this show is, like I mentioned before, deep diving into disinformation, and probably in the next episode, what we'll do is break down what propaganda means to us, what some of these terms mean when we talk about disinformation versus misinformation and whatnot. I'd like to explore, go deep on different nation state operations. When I say nation state, I mean like Russia, China, whoever might be conducting influence operations. That's an area that I'll dive deep in, and those episodes will probably be a little bit more structured, a little bit more detailed into exactly what happened. Trying to tell that story so it makes sense. Joe or Arthur, any thoughts or anything you want to bring up as far as how we're going to relay information to people?
Yeah, I think in particular with consumption, I'm really interested in the verbiage used around public and social goods these days. Take, for instance, the latest around Social Security and how it's being called the largest Ponzi scheme in history, or how certain people are using the word entitlement as though it means that it's like a negative thing rather than like people are entitled to the money. So I think relaying, socio-economical, political information.
I was liking where you were going, because there is a lot of that propaganda around just those subtle manipulations of language where you can take this institution like Social Security that was started in a good way and like, you just change the way you talk about it a little bit and suddenly the implied meaning of the word slips in unnoticed. And suddenly people are like, oh, you think you're entitled to Social Security? And it's like,
that's the point.
Like, yeah. You pay into it. Everybody does. They're stealing from you. What are you talking about? No, I think, what can people expect? Obviously, a lot of those deep dives that Cody's going to jump into are going to be great. We're going to talk about the propaganda of language and how it functions in society. I want to get into some history. I think I'm excited about our book club stuff. I think there will be a lot of cool opportunities just ongoing for us to demonstrate our learning process. I have a ton of unread books that I want to read in my house already. And so like this book, The Black Jacobins by C.L.R. James, which is about the Haitian Revolution, the slave revolt. I read the first 3 or 4 chapters a while ago, and then something distracted me and I put it down. So I would love to get an opportunity for us to just learn about the Haitian Revolution together and talk about, is there anything useful propaganda-wise, resistance-wise, that we can point out to the listener and learn for ourselves and demonstrate? Movie club sounds interesting. I'd love to talk about movies and propaganda and film. But I think they can expect good conversations about relevant topics that demonstrate a healthy way to have these conversations. You know, we're not going to be doing the rage bait, bickering bullshit that a lot of people do online these days. We're actually trying to have a useful conversation, which means we have to be patient enough with each other to actually understand our different points of view. And that means that the conversations might be a little bit more slow than the type of conversations you're used to seeing online. It might take us a little bit longer to get through a topic because we have to understand each other first, and we're not just shouting over each other trying to, you know, I'm right because I'm louder kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's what I'm excited about.
All right, so I think we can start to wrap up for this episode, but I got two questions for both of you kind of as an end here. So the first question, what does wild success look like to you for this show? Like, wildest dreams. Are we overthrowing Joe Rogan? Well, he already got overthrown by Midas Touch, but seriously, what is your, if nothing else, what do you hope to get out of this show? Or where do you hope the show goes? I think for me, it's want to put out a show, obviously, that people will get value out of in every way that we've talked about so far. But I'd also like to build a community around it. Like, I'd like to interact with the people that listen to the show. I'd like to find ways to promote events in different areas that get people out, get people together, and start to build a community. That would be ultimate success for me, that people get value out of the show from one, an educational standpoint, and it helps them in their day-to-day life, and it builds a community, both online and in person. So that's ultimate success for me.
Nice. I love that. I think that my hope would be that the community around it is one that supports kind of like this whole Bernie movement right now, where he's talking about, like, you know, getting rid of oligarchy and just kind of like observing the political world around you. I think that, like, to be born is to be political. And I think that engaging in that and getting votership up all the time, you know, I think that societies tend to lean towards a more liberal direction, or progressive direction might be the right term there. And my hope would be that we kind of add a voice to the antithesis of what is going on, and people who've recently been freed from Romanian prisons and are in the US right now, Andrew Tate. So I think, you know, kind of having the antithesis of that would be my hope. That would be wild success.
I haven't heard anything I disagree with. I think wild success is an interesting question. The first thing that popped to mind is if we can get Hassan on the show. Are you guys familiar with Hassan, the streamer, podcaster person? He's a good voice on the left in sort of the fray of influencing young men online sphere. There's a vast number of, like, especially young men on the internet getting influenced already. And, like, we're part of that. We've grown up in the internet age. We've been a part of that ourselves. We know what it's like to sort of have to consume all the content that's out there. And we get influenced and we get attached to different voices, different personalities. We could each, you know, go down a list of different people we followed online, whether it's podcasters or journalists or whoever, who have sort of influenced our intellectual journey over the years. But we're sort of recognizing that we're at a point in the world where it's time to do the work. A lot of us are sort of sitting on the sidelines, have been for a long time, watching all these people that a lot of us consider clowns to just take all of the attention and influence and, you know, just burn it, like just burn through it for no good reason other than that they want the attention. And I think you guys probably agree with me that none of us are like people who are desperate for internet attention. Like, we don't really want to be internet famous, but we have a perspective that we recognize is useful, and we're trying to, like, jump in a way that, like, helps other people recognize that it's time to get to work, it's time to build communities, it's time to share resources, it's time to actually get to the bottom of these problems and start figuring out how to move society in a direction that's better for everybody. There's over 800 billionaires in this country. There's plenty of money and resources and institutions and power for us to improve things. So it's time for us to stop standing on the sidelines and start doing things about it. And so wild success for me is like basically what you were saying, Cody, and in the trajectory that, Arthur, you were saying with the Bernie movement, the anti-oligarchy movement, the sort of, you know, let's build community, let's inspire people, and let's, like, actually get to work making the world better. if we can be a one lighter or one match among many that sort of gets the fire going, that's what wild success looks like for me.
100% agree. Joe, you did mention, you know, someone that you'd like to bring on the show. You know, if we had our choice, Arthur, anyone that you would like to see on the show, anyone that you would like to interview, if we got to that point?
Yeah, you know, I watched a lot of the Young Turks, which I think was how I found out about Son.
Yeah, because his uncle.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow, cool. Okay, well then, yeah, but you know, I think personally, I'm pretty interested in interviewing local representatives. I have a congresswoman, Val Hoyle, and I'd be really interested in interviewing her.
Joe, anyone other than Hassan?
Yeah, I'd love to bring some politicians and stuff on. That'd be fun. Oh, maybe, you know, there are a handful of, yeah, I don't know. I'm immediately thinking of so many people now, but first person I thought of was Norman Finkelstein. Do you guys know who Norman Finkelstein is?
No.
Oh, okay. No. He's a Jewish scholar who talks a lot about Palestine, and he has this way of explaining things that annoys the shit out of people, but he's an old intellectual guy. And he talks very deliberately and uses language so carefully. And he's so carefully worded and calm and precise to the point that it really annoys people, but you can't catch him slipping on his arguments. He's so careful with everything and has really good analysis. And I think a really big heart, like his politics is really driven by his compassion and his empathy. I just think it's cool to see someone so fearless and intellectual just jumping into it and not being afraid to get into those messy arguments. Norm Finkelstein would be a dream guest to have on.
Nice. You know, for me, it's, I think if I could pick one person, it'd probably be Nina Jankowicz. I apologize if I messed up that last name, but she was the author of How to Lose the Information War, which is a book I read a little while back. Really insightful book on geopolitical disinformation operations, for sure. So if it's something that interests you, highly recommend her book. And it'll definitely be something I source from for some of the future episodes. But yeah, would love to have some experts in that field on. And she's one of the ones that come to mind. And then also, I think I really like what you said about possibly local politicians too. Because, you know, we'll talk about national politics and things like that, but one area that does not probably get enough coverage is, you know, who's running for your state Senate seat, right? Who's running for your state representatives or for your town, right? Even that. So yeah, I think that would be awesome as well. And that kind of wraps up the show for today. I guess technically we're supposed to do like we don't really have plugs yet, do we? So stay informed, not influenced, and remember that propaganda loves you.